Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. There's a lot on my plate today. There's a lot on my plate, and I'm trying to put all of this into perspective as we spend our afternoon together here. You know, I don't know if you're in the car when you're listening here to America Out Loud, or if you're at home, you're working around the yard, you know, doing gardening like I do. I listen to America Out Loud when I'm doing my gardening in the yard. I have it on as a backdrop, listening to the other shows, because it's interesting. What I find, though, is that the shows get so interesting, I stop what I'm doing, and I end up sitting there listening. So I like to reach you where you are, however it is you listen to America Out Loud, because this is the place for free speech. This is the location where you can count on free speech taking place. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe, and I'm glad to be here with you. There's so many things that I want to talk about that kind of go with a previous episode. We were talking about the truth and why truth is no longer valued. Now, it might be valued by you. Do you value truth? I do. Don't we want truth in our relationships? You know, we want truth from our spouses, from our children, from our close friends. How about from our employers? Don't we want them to be truthful with us? You know, if the company's going through a hard time, it would be nice for the management or the ownership to come out and say, hey, listen, here's the reality. We're going through a hard time, and here's the truth about it. Now, the problem with truth is that truth can be subjugated. Truth can be twisted. Truth can be used partially to do things. It can be used to manipulate. So when we look at, of course, you know, coronavirus, we're asking ourselves, are we being manipulated for some other purpose? And you've heard me say this before. As an investigator, my first thought is to, when I'm investigating a crime, especially a financial crime, is to, you know, follow the money. Who has something to benefit by this? And you follow that back, and that'll usually tell you who you need to look at, who's involved with what. Well, we've said this before with Corona. Who has something to value here? Well, I guess it all depends on what you're considering valuable. So have we reached a point when the two parties in our country are really so diametrically opposed to one another, with one wanting traditional free speech, constitutional governance, freedom of everything we are so used to here in America? You know, like God gave us free life, and everything else that is created by government is to take away some of that freedom. Right? But America has been the bastion in the world where your human freedoms have been respected, where you could live your life pretty much as you choose to do. We've gone through many different changes in the course of our lives as human beings, as Americans, where we've gone through what was considered a norm at one time, and we grew from that and realized maybe that wasn't the best way to do things. And we've changed. That's the beauty of America. You know, you got to imagine our forefathers. These were men back in, you know, in the 1700s of our country. There was not even electricity yet, or indoor plumbing for the most part. And here are these men trying to plot out the freest nation that had ever been seen on the face of the earth. Now think about that for a minute. That's really what America is. Our Constitution, our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, all of those documents are blueprints for freedom that were never seen before in the world. Now you can say, okay, you know, there have been highlights here and there for the good course of time that we have seen. We've seen those kind of things, but nothing on the scale of what we saw by our forefathers in creating this nation, trying to develop a way that government could function for the people, by the people, and not against the people. Government, by its very nature, cannot help but to rule you. Because if you say to someone, there has to be a central form of authority, otherwise, we're all just going to run roughshod. We're the Wild West. We all do whatever we want to do. And for some of us, that would be okay, because some of us are good and decent people. we would live the same exact lives we're living right now. We would do the right thing. We'd take care of our families. We would help our friends. We would go to church. We would be decent people. You know, for most of us that live like this, we don't need a big central government to step in and tell us what to do. Or really to protect other people from us, because we're not going to go and do bad things. On the other hand, there's that other side of our society. And when I say the other side, I'm not talking about any particular person or group. So get that stupid thought out of your head. I'm talking about humanity as a whole. Every culture, every race, every religion has these kind of people in it, good and bad. So and anything you're thinking, you're reading into it, stop. I'm talking about people in general, no matter where you are. All right? There are good people and there are bad people. And if you didn't have any kind of a centralized government, an authority to protect people from the bad people, you would have a survival of the fittest kind of a thing. The strongest person would take everything that they wanted. They would brutalize anyone who got in their way. They would run roughshod over people. It would be a horrific lifestyle because that is, unfortunately, that is the legacy of humanity. That is what man is. We are an animal that on one side of the equation, as caring, loving, decent beings, there's nothing better than man other than God and the angels. There is such a loving side of man that we can care for those who have less than us, that we can help those who are hurting emotionally, financially, physically. We can put ourselves out. We can do good things. And most of that comes to us through religion. The fact that we even see religion as something to help us, really, now I'm putting this thought together here. As you look at it, religion, before there was a government, right? A government to dictate rules and regulations at the point of a gun or in some other way of forcing you to compliance, there was religion. Now, isn't religion a form of rules, regulations, guideposts for how we should behave? It really is. So in a way, before there was formal, human governments, there was the governance of the Almighty, the governance of God, who let us know what he thought is the right way for us to behave. And this is what we see in many religions. In most religions, we see these edicts, these ideas and these concepts by the Almighty of how human beings should interact with each other, how they should care for each other, and yes, how they should punish each other if they step out of line. Now, some religions are more about punishment than others. Some are more about the loving way to deal with people than others. And that's the compilation of, I think, maybe the true messages from God and the interpretation by man, because, you know, man heard these things. So we hear that the Bible is the divine word of God put into writing, that he inspired the writers to write the things that they did. And that's what makes the Bible the word of God. Now, the argument amongst religious people, and I don't mean to get into a religious discussion here, but I think all of this is important if we to understand the place of governance and rules in our lives, is that there's differences even between my own Christian religion, where some groups don't see the Bible as absolute word of God. They see it as people wrote down the stories about God, and we're supposed to take from them what we can, and then we interpret ourselves. Now, I don't disparage anybody's religion. I look at it and I say to myself, well, really, there's only two ways to look at that. Either it is from God or it is interpreted by man. Have we ever had a problem when man has interpreted the word of God? Let's take a look at that. Jim Jones comes to mind, right? Wasn't he out there preaching his own form of what God is all about? David Koresh, didn't he preach what he... Oh, he was God himself, I think, is what he was telling people. And he was interpreting the word of God. We see lots of these people throughout history that have interpreted the word of God themselves. Because if you go by the Bible and you look at it as divinely inspired, then there's a lot of responsibility on the reader's part, isn't there? Don't you really have to look inward and say to yourself, gee, do I do those things that are good? Do I engage in those things that are bad? Can I be better? Should I do more? Should I do less, right? Well, when we look at this and we see that that's all about a truth, right? What is the truth? Is it divinely inspired rules, regulations, governance from God? Or is the Bible stories that were written down meant to be interpreted by mankind as to how we should interact? So the truth, right there, you have two different sets of truths. A lot of people have a problem with the Pope, and I don't mean this particular Pope, because a lot of people have a problem with this particular Pope just because of what seems to be his more socialist side, okay? But when I'm talking about, you know, they don't even like the idea of the Pope, but when you look at the Bible, wasn't it Jesus Christ who said, "On this rock I make my church, you are the priest of my church"? And that would go out through all time, so the Pope would be the leader Jesus Christ put in charge. But some people don't believe that, they don't want to believe it, and they found a different way to look at that, and they disregard the Pope. So what is truth? Truth, then, it would seem, is in the eye, the ear, and the heart of the beholder. Now that we've kind of had that little bit of a background, let's now jump forward and look at the truth that we got here about government, our modern government. And America. America was set up so that we could change things if we saw we needed to change things, still with the bedrock of understanding that government's place was to serve the people, not the other way around. See, when you give somebody power, and again, it's going to come down to this kind of a truth. Some people are going to be good, benevolent leaders, and some people are going to be corrupted by power. So let's ask ourselves this question. In our modern world today, not just in America, but in the whole world, is the world led by good and decent people who just want to do the right thing, who are answering a calling to help society, to help mankind to be better? Or are they corrupted? Maybe not totally corrupt, but they're corrupt in ways that benefit them without being totally corrupt. I mean, don't we see that in any organization? Don't we see that in just about anything? So what is the truth there? See, this is what I've been contemplating for the last couple of weeks here, is this whole concept of truth. What are we talking about? You know, truth by the eye of the beholder, okay? So I remember when Bill Clinton was president and he had his affair with Monica, who was an innocent young woman. Now, you can say innocent. She participated in all that. Yes, she did. And she was of adult age. She was 20 years old, 21 years old. But she was there, right? He was, him and the whole White House thing as an intern, they're there as loco parentis. They're in place of the parents. You have a young person in their 20s. She was taken advantage of. Now, did she participate? Of course she did. But that doesn't mean that made it right. Right, so the truth was, yes, she participated, and yes, she was an adult, but the other truth there is that it never should have happened. Bill Clinton shouldn't have done that with that young woman just because she was willing. Doesn't make it right. Couldn't you find a lot of people that are willing to do things that you shouldn't do it with? Of course it is. Imagine your own children. If your own children don't really understand those boundaries and somebody comes along that they're really infatuated with, they really like, and they can talk them into doing things that are not appropriate. Would you be happy about that? No, of course you wouldn't. So we don't want to draw lines of right and wrong, especially now in our country. And I don't mean to go all around the map here today. I'm trying to, you know, draw these things all together. You know how I do this. I think them through. But truth is what I guess we can make of it. Or is there an absolute truth? That's what I'm trying to get to. You know, we have the same religion, but yet we have different truths. We have the same government, and we have different truths. We have the same actions that we see take place, and we have different truths. Look at our social justice. Critical race theory. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Well, on its face value, I guess its proponents would say it's the truth, and the truth hurts, and we need to expose the truth for the greater good. Okay. Maybe it is. And then on the other hand, you have people say, it's opinion, it's a version of the truth. Sure, it talks about things that actually happen, but it's not giving you a real picture. It's giving you a biased picture of what people want to bring out. So again, we have split two different kinds of truths. So here's our forefathers creating this country, building into its systems that would allow us to change, even though they were in the 1700s before, indoor plumbing, flushing toilets and you know, indoor electricity, they came up with this system that's the greatest system that has ever been known from that time till now for mankind. There is nothing better. And it all comes down to what we believe to be the truth about America. Was America designed only for rich white men to survive? Or was it really designed for the freedom of the people who live here? See, that's the two arguments that we have now. America was created for the freedom of the people that are American citizens, whether they migrate here and become legally American citizens, or they're born here and they're American citizens. It's every American's birthright to live in a land of freedom and justice, right? That's where we're here for. Or was it really designed just so some rich white guys could stay rich and take advantage of everybody else? Now, I know I say that with kind of a tone in my voice because I don't really believe it. Now, I'm not stupid. I can look back and go, yeah, they were all white guys and they all had money. They were all rich guys, pretty much for the most part, that created the country. But who else is going to have any kind of a power? Who else has any kind of a power? Do people on low socioeconomic rungs in life, what kind of power do they actually have? Well, they have one kind of very, very important power that's equal to everyone else's, and that's the power to vote, right? That was built into our system. Didn't matter who you are, you could vote. Now, of course, the naysayers are going to go, yes, but certain people couldn't vote. Women weren't allowed to vote. If you weren't a landowner, you weren't allowed to vote. If you were an African-American, you weren't allowed to vote. And that's true. Those things are all true. And they were set up at the time under the standards of the time. Now, let me ask you this. Can women vote today? Oh my gosh, they can. Can African-Americans vote today? Yes, they can. Oh my gosh. Can a poor guy that doesn't own anything, or a poor girl who doesn't own anything, can they vote? Oh my gosh, they can. They're allowed to vote. How could that possibly happen? Well, it happened because of the brilliance of the forefathers who created a system where we could change. Right? What they knew in the 1700s about life and the universe and man, was that different than what they knew in the 1500s? Or how about the 1000s? Or the 800s? Doesn't every generation going forward learn more about our humanity, who we are, what's right and wrong, and change as we go forward? Of course it does. And that's exactly what happens here. In America, though, it would seem, and I don't know how to say this without giving away maybe my frustration, is that until recently, that kind of a truth was self-evident, in that when we realized something was not right, even if it wasn't an immediate fix, right? Like the civil rights movement, that wasn't not an immediate fix. But we saw that there was things wrong. The majority of people recognized, gee, the way we've done things in the past is really not right. We have to change it. We have to move forward. And that's why many of our laws and our customs have changed. And they do change. Now, is it fast enough? No. If I could wave a special magic Lieutenant Joe wand and make all the problems of our society go away, I would do it in an instant. But I can't. And I can't make everyone else do it either. So it's about time. It takes time for ideas to take hold. It takes time for people to see things differently. Sometimes it takes generations. But our system and the beauty of our system and why it should be protected, right, and adored and loved and reinforced is because it can change. Where else in the world can it change like it does in America, right? Where else can it change? So these are truths about America. Now, I'm sure people on the other side who don't like America will say, it's nonsense, it didn't really change, nothing's really changed, even though we can go through a litany of changes since 1776 about how society intermingles, who gets to intermingle, who gets to do what in our society. It's completely changed from that time, and it'll be even further changed. Look at all the groups now that are seeing acceptance that never did before. Not only acceptance, but prominence in our society. Can you name a few? Of course we can. Well, how can that possibly be? Right? If people, if you know, rich white guys in the background are running everything and hate everybody but themselves, How is it that these changes can happen? And that's why I don't deny that wealthy people have a lot of control, no matter what your color, your race, your age, your sex, doesn't matter. Wealthy people have a lot more say about things than people who don't have money. That's just the truth, right? That's the truth, no matter who you are, right? I've told you my story 1,000 times. When I was a kid growing up, what kind of power did I have? Where was my privilege? There was no privilege. I was a poor kid. I had nothing to say. I had nothing to do, right? But as time goes by and you grow financially because you work hard or you come up with something or you invent something or you get a good job or an education, you have more and more power. Well, that's true for everybody. Not as easy for everybody. See, I understand that. It's not as easy for everybody. And in that way, when people say privilege, I say, okay, maybe I can see that. Maybe I can see that some people do have it easier than others. I think they do. Do people have it easier than me, though? Yes, they do. Some people have it easier than me. How about good-looking people? Well, I know. Thank you. I know what you're all saying. You're all texting me now. Oh, Lieutenant Joe, you're a good-looking. I know. My point being, how about beautiful people? Let's put it that way. Beautiful men and women who are just physically beautiful people, right? Beautiful faces. They've been blessed with beautiful bodies. You know, they're just perfect. Don't they have an easier time in life in general than people who are not physically attractive, right? Were you the homecoming queen or the homecoming king? Or was it really just an elite group of people who were just, you know, that perfect in the physicality of being human that they were chosen for those things? There's always one or two guys and girls that are just like really spectacularly gifted with looks and that kind of thing. Do they have an easier time in life than the rest of us? Well, of course they do. Of course they do. Is that right? Does it make it right? No, but that's a reality. That's just the way it is. So we either learn to play the game, understand the game, and move on, or we're going to spend our time being miserable and hating people, and that's ridiculous. Because you know what? Even beautiful people have terrible, horrible problems sometimes. They do, right? I'm not saying that's the perfect life, but I'm using that as an example. There's lots of different subsets of who has it easy and who has it hard, okay? How about somebody who's really gifted as an athlete, male or female, really gifted as an athlete? And how do they go and get to play a sport that they love from childhood through their adult, young adult years, maybe until their late 30s, making millions of dollars, playing a game, living an unbelievable lifestyle, boats, houses, cars, unbelievable travel, because they can play a sport really well? How is that fair? It's not. It's not fair. It's just, it is what it is. We all have different gifts. We all have different gifts. All right, so I'm kind of spinning out of control here as this thought's taking me down the road. What I'm trying to say is when it comes to this whole privilege thing that we're attacking each other over, well, yes, it is easier for some people to do things and to get ahead than for other people. That's true. But that doesn't mean it's impossible. That doesn't mean it's a set, closed game. Right? My family, my children will be in a much better position in life because of the hard work my wife and I have done. And we are in a better position because of the work that my mother, my father, and my in-laws did to help us to grow and to learn and be better and get educated and do things. It takes time for these things to happen. That's my big point here. That's my big circle back point now. Thank you, Ms. Bozaki. I'm circling back now. My big circle back here is that, yes, there are different difficulties for different people. But America, we can overcome them with hard work, with education. Not everyone in the world. I want to be a great actor. Doesn't mean I'm ever going to get to be in a Spielberg movie and be a leading man and be a superstar. Even though I really want it bad and it's not fair other people could do it. But I could try. If I really want to act, I can go act. I can go find a place to act. There's plays, there's different kinds of things, right? We can all do anything we want. The level of success we achieve, that's based on a lot of factors. Luck, some status, where you're starting from, of course. You know, but how do you make that playing field? How do you make that playing field even? Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the top five guys in every class that are excellent athletes, and the five guys who are the worst athletes on the entire school system here, and those guys who are really untalented at sports, they're going to have the starting positions. Now, would that be fair? Well, you'd let those guys who never have a chance, and I say guys, it could be guys and girls, right? Don't go crazy over that, because I'm saying guys or girls. They would never have a chance to play a starting position on their high school team, their college team. They'll never get to the pros because they just don't have the talent. That's just the way it is, right? So would it be fair to take the really talented people and make them sit down? No, that wouldn't be fair. We should all rise to our abilities. We should all rise to the level that we can attain by the gifts that God gave us. You know, Rush Limbaugh used to say all the time that he was operating on talent on loan from God. And people would get crazy thinking that he was saying that, oh, he thinks he's godlike. No, think about what he was saying. He's got talent to do what he did, his radio show. He was amazing, an amazing man. He moved people emotionally, intellectually. And he would say, I got talent on loan from God, which meant for whatever reason, Rush had those talents to run a radio show. He's like the great Malcolm Out Loud. Malcolm has the same kind of talents, right, as Rush did. He's a good speaker. He's smart. He's quick on his feet, all those kind of things. But that talent is individualized to them. There's other people you could put up on the radio and they couldn't put two words together. Look at me. Look how I struggle to try and put together a couple of sentences here when I spend time with you here in the afternoon. Right? So we all have different levels of talent. When I was, and how many examples can I give you without boring you to death out there? I wanted to paint. I just love the idea. I love the great artists. I get in trouble when I go to museums because I touch the paintings. I know, and half of you are recoiling now. Oh my God, you touched the artwork. I do. And my wife Kathleen yells at me all the time, and I got caught in a gallery one time touching a Van Gogh because I just was so enamored with the strokes and the way he painted it. And, you know, it's real thick. His paint's real thick. You can actually see the strokes that the great artist made making this painting. And I'd look at those Van Goghs and I'd say, how can that guy have that kind of talent? And I try and paint and I look like I make stick figures. You know, how come I can't paint? So Kathleen got me all this painting equipment and I sat there with my tambourine on and my little thing and I'm trying to paint. And I painted one of those goldenrod bushes, and I thought it looked like a goldenrod bush. I thought it was pretty good, but there was nothing special about it. And it was disappointing to me because I just love art, painting especially, so much. I wish I could paint, but that doesn't make it happen. Somebody else is going to come along that does nothing, and they'll be able to paint beautifully. And, well, here's the equation there. I get to enjoy it. I get to see it and feel good about their art. I wish I could do it myself, but I can't. So I guess my big point here for our first segment get together here is really understanding, you know, this truth. What is truth? Is it in the eye of the beholder? Is it in the perception of the beholder? Or are there black and white truths that we can really hold on to? And I think it's hard in our modern world when every side of an argument has 10 other sides. And we don't always know which side is right because we can't always get to the truth. You know, like I said in the beginning, truth can be manipulated, can it? Is there a COVID-19 virus? There is. Do some people die from it? They do. Do some people have really bad reactions to it? They do. Does that mean we had to shut our entire society down and change the way we interact as human beings? The power government has over us to arrest a man who runs a gym because he wanted to open his gym, to put him in jail because he wanted to conduct his business, and the government said no. Is that a truth? Is the virus that bad? Had we not locked down, would we all be dead now? Well, isn't the other side of that truth that what we see from science, you know, follow the science, but we don't follow the science all the way, only as far as it backs up our argument, right? Isn't that what really happens? If we follow the science, you would see that 98 or 99% of people who get COVID survive it, like many other diseases. Now, for that 1 or 2% who don't survive it, it's devastating and terrible. But is that the truth? Does hydroxychloroquine and these other drugs that we now say can treat you if you have COVID symptoms? How come it wasn't true a year ago? How come when President Trump said it, hydroxychloroquine and these other things, ivermectin, that he was crazy, he was a conspiracy theorist, he was going to kill you by telling you that? And we find out a year later, those things, you can really treat COVID and it can help you survive. People who may have died would survive if they took those things early on. But last year, that truth was a lie. This year, it's a different truth. Why? Because we changed the game enough. We got rid of Trump. We changed the government. We changed who's in charge of stuff. So now it's okay. Was truth really the truth, or was it simply a tool used to manipulate us? Well, that's where we're gonna take a break now. I'm gonna jump off. I'll be back in a minute. Thanks for being here, and we got a lot more to think about.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
All right, my friends, welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And, our first segment there, we kind of rolled pretty quick. That's kind of, I guess, you know, when I sit down every week and I try and come up with different topics for the week and what I'm going to talk about and how I'm going to talk about them, you know, having this ability to come to you, to speak to you, to be on this radio network, which is around the world. You know, I get emails from people around the world. Oh, Lieutenant Joe, we love you. You know, it's very nice. You know, I don't even know where countries they're calling me from. But it's excellent. And it tells me that I have a voice, and that in itself is a gift. Now, whether you agree with me or disagree with me, if I help you to think or if I give you things to think about, that I have no control over. But what I can tell you is that it is a gift of free speech, and it's directly coming to me from our forefathers. This, I'm enjoying this, sitting here. Me on this side of the microphone and you on that side of the microphone listening is a gift from our forefathers of free speech, right? And I really enjoy it. So what do I want to tell you about? Well, I've been telling you for weeks now about some vitamin supplements, immune super boost from Healthy Cell. I've been telling you about it and telling you about it. And when I first started talking about it, it was when I first started taking it. And I had read all about it and I said, you know, this is... If this can help me be healthy, I'll be happy. I hope it's not one of those kind of things that you take it really doesn't do anything, but you kind of think it's doing something for you. So I told you all along my battle here. I'm trying to figure it out. I don't get anything out of this. They're not a paid advertiser of mine. But I was looking for something to help me boost my immune system in this time of COVID. Right? You know, we're trying to do everything we can to stay healthy. I have family to raise. I have a wife to take care of. I have my own things I want to do, and I want to be a healthy person. I want to run my business. I want to be on the radio here with you, and I have to be healthy to do that. So when I had the opportunity, I said, you know what? Let me try some of the Healthy Cells products, and let me see what they got here. And I started taking this Immune Super Boost, and I have to tell you, I took it for a while. I did feel better, and then I said, okay, maybe I'm just imagining it. So I stopped taking it, and I kind of went back to where I was feeling I don't know, not lazy, not run down, just not feeling optimum. And I think I told you about it. I came on and told you I stopped, and I felt like there was a difference. Well, then I started taking it again. Now I've been taking it steady, like every single day. It's one of my things that I do. It's part of my routine. I have my morning coffee, and I have my my healthy cell, right? So I have my immune boost here, and I squirt it right out of the bucket. There's a little pouch. I squirt it right out of that, and I enjoy it myself. It's a good taste, and I do feel a lot better. I mean, I really do. So I could go on and on about it here, but it's something that I want to tell you about because it is important. I know they advertise on the station, and that's where you can get the information. Give it a try. If you're looking to be healthy, you're looking to feel better, give it a try. You know, I think it'll work for you too. And I just wanted to tell you about that. All right. So when I'm planning what I'm going to talk about, and one thing usually leads me from one way to another. But, you know, we just talked about the COVID a little bit, and I'm really getting sick of the whole COVID thing, aren't you? I mean, I'm really getting sick of this whole thing. Every single day. It's like now we got the Delta variant. The Delta variant's going to get us all. What's next? The Epsilon? You know, the Epsilon variant as soon as the Delta's over? Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. From what I'm hearing is that it's much more contagious, the Delta variant. You can get it easier. But it is less deadly. So basically, we come back to that same factor, is that, yeah, you might get it, and it could be really uncomfortable to have it. I've spoken to people that had COVID, and some of them have really suffered, you know, and I wouldn't want anybody to suffer. I wouldn't myself or my family to suffer like that. But the fact is, they didn't die. It's like having the bad flu. Did you ever see anybody have the bad flu, like regular influenza, and they're laying in the bed, and they're miserable, and their head hurts, and they're sick, and the body... Well, COVID is just like that, with the component of, you know, really hard breathing, which is scary. There's no doubt about it. I don't want any of it, right? But we see this whole COVID thing going on, and we're asking ourselves, is it true or it not true? So now they're saying, you had to get vaccinated. You have to get vaccinated to protect the rest of the world. But now people who are vaccinated are getting the COVID-D, the variant, and they're getting sick. Now, they're not dying, but they're getting sick. So you're vaccinated, and you're still getting it. If you don't get vaccinated, you can't go places. You can't go to concerts. You can't go to work in some places. You can't do lots of things if you're not vaccinated. But the vaccine doesn't necessarily work. And there are people dying. Now, how many are dying? I don't know. If we look at the VARS, which is, I think, the vaccine reaction, something from the government. I can't think of the name of it offhand. I'm sorry. But they keep track of vaccines and how they react with people. And we find that the COVID vaccines, there have been, I think, according to their site, the government's official site, 5,000 to 6,000 deaths associated with the vaccine. Now, maybe there are people with underlying conditions, people with allergic reactions. But from my research, what I have seen, and Dr. McCullough, who's been on the station here many times, I've heard him speak. He's blocked on most social media because he's got a different point of view than the government, which is, I think our forefathers would think that's a good thing. Is that truthful? I don't know. But anyway, Dr. McCullough came out and said that there's probably three times as many deaths related to the vaccines as what we're being told. So let's just go with the 5,000. It was my understanding that if a new vaccine came out, manufacturer came out with a vaccine, and 100 people died from the vaccine, it would be yanked off the market so fast it would make your head spin. Because that's a danger. 100 people died, right? Well, here we have a vaccine that 5,000 people have died from. And not only are they not yanking it off the market, they're encouraging everybody to take it, right? They're encouraging you to take something that 5,000... Now, of course, you do the number. People will do the number, and they'll say, well, you know, 150 million people have had the vaccination, and only 5,000 have died. Well, if you're one of those 5,000, or one of those 5,000 is in your family, that's horrific. Have we done enough? Have we done, right? We all hear these arguments. I'm getting sick of it. All I know is, I told you, in my house, we're wrestling with this, right? My children are going to college, and they're making them take the vaccine. And it's scary, because some young people have died from taking the vaccine. Do you want your kids to die, to do something that if they got the COVID, as young people, they would have probably two difficult weeks, maybe at worst, and then they'd be fine. And they would have natural antibodies in their body, and they would never get the COVID again, even the variants. But what we're seeing with the vaccine is that it is somewhat dangerous. And here's how I break that down. I had an argument with somebody the other day. And I'm not taking I'm a vaccine person. I've taken every vaccine in the world. I don't like experimental vaccines, and I'm not sure about this one. That's my only argument. And I can't get good information because all people do is lie to me and don't let me hear one side of an argument. And that's all I'm asking. Give me the whole both sides and let me make a decision. But anyway, I'm having an argument with somebody about these vaccines, and it's perfectly safe. It's perfectly safe. It's perfectly safe. It's perfectly safe. That's all they tell me. So, okay. Out of all the people that have taken it, has anybody died? Well, yeah, a couple people. But of course, they had a blue eyeball and then they had some fungus on their tongue. No. Some normally healthy people have died, right? A week after taking it, 2 days after taking it, within hours, right? Is that true or not? Well, yeah, there's been a couple. There's been a couple. Well, 5,000 is not a couple. It's a lot. 5,000, that's, what's that, 100 per state? 100 people per state. Oh, that number's so small. Unless, of course, you're in a state with a very small number of people, then, of course, your odds go way up of dying. But anyway, my point being, in having this conversation, I said, so you're telling me it's perfectly safe, and in the same breath, you're telling me, yeah, people, healthy people have died from taking the vaccine. Is that correct? Well, yeah, some have. I said, so it's not perfectly safe then, right? Words mean things, right? Let's factor this in. It's not perfectly safe. It's relatively safe. I'm willing to go along with that. When I look at those numbers, even if it is, 30,000 people who have died from it, God forbid it's somebody you know or somebody in your family or you. But let's say 30,000 people out of 150 million vaccinations. That number, that statistical number, is very, very small. It absolutely is. Your chances of dying are really, really very small. Now, when you add to that, though, the injuries, some people are permanently damaged from it. Their organs, they're having mental issues because of this. So when you add those, let's say 50,000 people are injured or dead from the vaccine. That's not insignificant, right? Now, that's 1,000 people per state. See, before we said it was 100 people per state. Now it's 1,000 people per state. Okay, I live in New Jersey. There's 9 million people here. So my chances are extremely, extremely small, unless, of course, it happens to me. But I'm arguing with this person. And I said, okay, so you say perfectly safe. We both agree there's been deaths and injuries to a lot of people. Not an overwhelming majority, but to a lot of people. So is it still, in your mind, perfectly safe, or is it relatively safe? And that's what I'm saying. I can accept that term. It's relatively safe. It is. In relative terms, your chances are very small of having a bad reaction and dying, though some people do. It is relatively safe, and if it prevents the spread of the disease to you or your family members or to the rest of the country, that would be a good thing. Okay, see, I'm not anti-vax. I'm not against this. I'm just trying to figure it out, and people won't tell me the truth. I'm not allowed to hear half the truth. I'm not only allowed to hear the truth that they want me to hear. It's perfectly safe, perfectly safe. Well, it's relatively safe is what it is, right? For those people who drop dead from it, it's relatively bad for them, right? It's perfectly bad for them. So let's be clear about this. So that's part of the argument. So do I have my children take this vaccine that they don't want to take, but they're taking because they want to go to school and they don't want to be ostracized. They don't want to be held out. They don't want to be tested. That thing shoved up your nose 3 times a week. Because you see all these politicians and a lot of these talking heads on TV when they're pro-government, pro-vax, and they're like, well, we should make it as hard as possible for people who won't get vaccinated to make their life so miserable that they'll go and do it. Sure, of course, that's a great thing to do, right? How about if we all adopt that kind of thinking? See, I'm getting all fired up now, and I didn't want to get this fired up about this. But this is my point. If it's not perfectly safe, if it's relatively safe, why not just tell us that? Why not tell us, based on our facts, this is a relatively safe thing, but we really think it can prevent the spread further? Because if it stops the spread of the disease, overall, isn't that good for every one of us? Well, I would say yes, except there's the little problem right now of, well, even if you're vaccinated, you could still get COVID. You could still pass it on to people. You could still have... How is that possible? How is that possible that if you're vaccinated, you could still... Well, it's a different variant. It's a different thing. Now you got to get 3 shots. Oh, I see. So it's not perfectly effective. It's not perfectly safe. It's relatively safe and relatively effective. but it's going to be mandated that you're going to have to take it. Now, there's 330 million Americans. If we've had 50,000 deaths and injuries from 150 million, we can assume there'll be another 50,000 people who have to take it who will die and be sick. For something that is only relatively safe, relatively effective. What happened when the Epsilon variant comes out? And then, you know, the one after that and the one after that. I saw somebody today, and I want to give credit to where I heard it, but I'm sorry, I can't. They said, you know, how long do we go with this? Is there ever an end in sight? Is this COVID now, is this the thing that shuts us down completely? Is this the thing that got us? The comets couldn't get us. You know, the next asteroid didn't get us, like the dinosaurs got wiped out, but the COVID. And who benefits from all of this control over our society? Is your state resetting up mandates? I know there are some states that are doing it now. You better get that mask back on. California, Chicago, they're coming back with it. New York and New Jersey can't afford to be far behind, you know, because they're right in lockstep with everything else all the blue states do. Is that the right thing to do? Are you going to put that mask back on? Are you going to have your children put that mask back on? I don't know. We had a little taste of freedom here, didn't we, for a couple of weeks here in the summer. We got to take our masks off, go to concerts, go back to bars and restaurants. And yeah, there's been a spike. There's been a spike in people getting COVID because it's still out there. But are our hospitals overflowing with people dying and we don't have enough equipment? We can't take care of them? Is that happening again? I don't know. What's the truth? I don't know. See, so there's my theme, ladies and gentlemen. Truth, truth, truth. Now, when it comes to truth, let's see. We have a Republican, Republican Representative McCaul. He's on he's in the House of Representatives, and he has come out with a report, or it's part of a report that has come out, and he was talking about it, and he calls the Wuhan lab cover-up the greatest cover-up in human history. Because if you read this article, and you can find it on Fox News, and you can find it a couple other places, you represent Michael McCaul from Texas. Where else but Texas, right? You can hear the truth from Texas, man. Come on. Texas is going to tell you the truth. That there's new findings from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Their probe into the origins of COVID-19. They're saying that the Communist Chinese Party has engaged in the greatest cover-up of all time. And I'm looking, I'm saying, okay, so what are some of the facts? Well, it seems that, you know, Dr. Fauci, such a guy of obvious truth and clarity, and, you know, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, you need a mask, you don't need a mask, it's going to kill you, it won't kill you, you're okay, you're not okay. You know, he's told us everything in the book, and he's still making $450,000 a year to tell us that. He has denied that he knew about or participated in the shoveling of funds to the Wuhan lab for work on it, where it actually made the virus easier for it to be communicated to people. Gain of function. That's what you keep hearing about. The gain of function. What's the function of a virus? To infiltrate your body and to infect you. So the gain of function, if you have a virus that's, it's really hard for it to get into your body, into a human body, and to affect you, if it's really hard for that to happen, then you work on it to see if you can change it a little through DNA or through some kind of other manipulation, scientific manipulation, so that the gain of the function would be to make it easier to catch. Now, why would you want to do that? I mean, is there a good-looking virus that if, you know, hey, we got this virus, and if you get it, man, it makes you really darn good-looking. You drop all the extra weight. You look like a chiseled Roman god, man. You're running around looking beautiful. Your hair grow back, Lieutenant Joe. You look fantastic. If there was a virus like that and we couldn't catch it, you would say, hey, why don't we do a little gain of function on that guy? And, you know, so we can all get the virus so we look good. Actually, I'm trying to connect to what I said earlier, right? No, why would you want to do a gain of function with a virus that could potentially kill you? Why would anybody want to do that? Let's let that sit there for 1 second. Why would that be? And again, remember what I always say, go back to who benefits. And it's happening in the Communist Chinese lab in Wuhan, because are they there to help all of humanity? Now, I think probably some of the doctors and scientists there are good and decent people. Who that's, yeah, they're hoping that they can find cures for things. I believe that. I think there's good in every people, in every group of us, right? But the Communist Party of China, are they there really to come up with some great thing to help the world, or are they there to help themselves? So let's ask that question first. I'm going to give you the answer. Here's the answer. The Communist Party of China is there to help themselves, right? They're to help themselves, increase their power, increase their influence. So why would they be playing around with a virus? You do the gain of function so that it can catch it, people can catch it easier and it could kill people. Well, that, my friends, is called a biological weapon. A biological weapon. Now, why would people make biological weapons? Why would you do that? Well, because you're not a good player, right? You're a hostile actor on the world stage. And at some point, you might want to weaken some other populations with something you set up. So you create a virus, you create a cure, you inoculate all your people to it, and then you let it loose. And the rest of the world gets it, and in their weakened state, you can take them over, either economically or physically, right? You can go take them over because they're weakened. They can't fight back. Look what we do when we had it. We pulled people off our ships. We shut our ships down. We moved our military people all over the place. Imagine if they were weakened to the point that they couldn't fight back and you could just roll all in. Or what if that happened and now they rolled into Taiwan? And they decide, you know, now's the time we're going to go take Taiwan. So why would you make a virus that's more virulent that could kill people? It's a bioweapon. Now, am I naive enough to think that Western powers and the United States don't look at the exact same thing? Of course we do, right? There's nuclear weapons out there. Everybody wants them. Why? So it's mutually assured destruction, so we don't fight. No, they want their own weapons, so in case they need to use it, they got a nuclear bomb, right? This is the nature of people. You know, if we're going to have a fight, and I bring a knife, and you bring a gun, well, you were pretty smart to bring a gun to a knife fight, right? Because who's going to win that conflagration there, right? Probably the guy or the girl with the gun. That's who's going to win because you got a stronger weapon. So if you're making biological weapons, and Dr. Fauci says he had nothing to do with that, and we seem to have, there seems to be proof. I mean, I'm seeing people talking about, not him personally, he didn't write a check and say, here, make it more violent. I think he's part of some organizations, though, that have given money. And he says he's not, but there seems to be proof that they did. But nobody in the media seems to care. Have you heard about it? Have you seen those stories? No, not unless you're watching Tucker Carlson or one of the Fox shows. Our left-wing friends are not going to go anywhere near anything like that. So we look at that and we say, what's the purpose of that? Well, to gain a function is to make it stronger and healthier. So what else happened? What else gives them belief that maybe they were trying to do something inappropriate? Well, let's see. Way back in September, before all of this, before all this really took off in 2020, Wuhan's lab genetic sequencing database. Right, it's a specific thing on how they genetically sequence DNA in different viruses, and they understand what makes them tick. They took it offline in the middle of the night. Gee, I wonder what was going on in the lab that they were sequencing that they didn't want anybody to see. That they wanted to pull the records of. They wanted to get it away before anybody else saw what was going on there. What could it have been? Well, obviously, the people investigating think that's because that's when they were doing the COVID-19 research and they were doing the tests and the changes to make it more communicable, right? That's what was going on. Satellite imagery. There's a good technology, right? We have these satellites that can look right down and read a license plate, you know, from outer space. They're seeing from around that same time shows increased activity at the hospitals near the Wuhan lab, right? So months ahead of the breakdown of the outbreak of COVID-19, the Wuhan Biosafety Lab requests bids for major renovations to air safety and waste treatment facilities that had been operational for less than 2 years. So obviously they found out, gee, something happened here. Something happened here that we need to get brand new air filtration systems. So my point is, you connect the dots. You put all these things together, and you start to see that there's something going on. Now, I don't know about you, but are you naive enough to believe that the virus came from Wuhan, but it came from the wet market where it hasn't reappeared, right? Because they were eating bats or something over there. All right. Well, how does it just stop in the wet market? The wet market's operational again. How does it just stop? Because all of a sudden, I guess they got healthy bats now. But in the meantime, the whole world is infected with this COVID. I don't know. It seems very clear to me that this was a weapons lab in China that was working on this gain-of-function stuff for whatever nefarious reason they were doing it. And it got out of control. You know, what is it? Occam's razor? Believe the simplest story? Oh, it was a wet market. It was from a banana-eating bat. Or it was a squirrel that liked, ring things. I have no idea. That's what it caused. No, how about it's a communist Chinese weapons, chemical weapons and biological weapons laboratory. They created something in there to use against their enemies, and it got out. Just like a dystopian story, right? Stephen King's story, The Stand, is exactly that. So listen, we covered a lot of stuff today. I'm really excited to come back and visit with you some more. So thanks for being here. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.